Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to an abbreviated Scrambled Eggs podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you here. We're just going to have a short podcast today, talk about the Big East tournament, as short as this day was for Marquette, and then we will look ahead to talk seeding and possibly what's ahead for the Golden Eagles. Phil, are your eyes adjusted after watching that game last night? And I'm not just talking about Notre Dame's uniforms.
My eyes stopped bleeding somewhere around 3 o'clock in the morning, so I feel like I've stabilized now. I'm afraid, though, since Notre Dame and Louisville are playing tonight, it's going to be an ugly off, and I just don't want to watch.
I don't think I will watch, actually. I think I'm just going to maybe skip that one altogether and maybe see the highlights and put some sunglasses on to watch those. But as for the game, we talked last week about this last Big East tournament as we know it, and you know, I said at the time I'd love to see Marquette win the Big East tournament just to hang one more banner and just for this team to overachieve once more. But you know, every time I start to think that maybe this team, after all, may be special and may have a magic horseshoe up its butt and be able to make a run and get more, you know, do some things that it's never done before, they have a game where that, you know, really humbles me and thinks, yeah, this team still has some flaws, and I think it wasn't their worst game of the season by any stretch, but still, it was a disappointing game, to say the least, against Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. It was one of those games where you kind of, you know, being a video game generation, where you kind of almost reflexively have a control in your hand, and you're like, no, I hit the circle button, Vander. it was just frustrating, because it seemed like we got off to such a fast start, but then the team kind of went lazy almost. There didn't seem to be a ton of effort or heart into it. It was just kind of perplexing all around.
You know, the team came out just guns blazing. What was it, a 17-4 run to start the game? And it looked like they might ready to run away and hide. And then the power of the timeout. Notre Dame called the timeout, stopped some momentum, and then the Irish clawed back into it, and it was really back and forth for most of the game, until Notre Dame really kind of took control late. And I think kind of the hot debate on Twitter, Phil, today and last night even, was, are you talking more about the refs today, or are we just placing more of the blame on the way Marquette played?
Yeah, well, and chalk me up to one of the internet crazies. I'm in the camp, Marquette's mostly to blame, but that officiating was horrid and has an impact on the game, because it was wildly inconsistent. Now, the team didn't do themselves any favors, but in a neutral game against Notre Dame, the margin's relatively narrow. And then you make some of those questionable officiating calls where Mayo is on the offensive end, is, you know, for lack of a better phrase, running a route, runs into a screen from Notre Dame, falls down and gets called for the offensive foul. And the very other end, Jamil Wilson has contact initiated against him by Grant and is called for the defensive foul. It takes you out of the game, and it's got to frustrate. And I'm not blaming the officials, but there was an impact there that I think was more amplified than you'd normally see.
Yeah, I hate to be one of those fans that after every game, the first thing they say is, well, the official screwed us again, because it just makes you sound like such a sore loser. And for me, yeah, there have been times where, as a sports fan, where I've looked at it and really just kind of been angry at the officials, but it has to be so egregious and a game-changing call for me to say the officials are why my favorite team lost the game. As for that game on Thursday night against Notre Dame, I was definitely frustrated with some of the calls that went against Marquette in that stretch late in the game when Notre Dame started to pull away. Like you said, the call against Lockett on one end and some really ticky-tack foul calls that went against Marquette on the other end got some and-ones for Notre Dame, and they really kind of put the game out of reach. But I still look at that game and I say Marquette still had its chances to win. The things that obviously jumped out to me, offensive rebounding for Notre Dame, even though I was surprised to look at the box score and see that Marquette actually won the rebounding battle, 32-27. It sure didn't seem that way watching it. It seemed like Notre Dame got every critical rebound.
Absolutely, especially in the last 4 minutes.
And so that's when it mattered the most. And the other thing that obviously jumped out was leaving Connaughton so often. Well, he was 6 of 10 from 3, and he probably could have had a few more that he just missed and was wide open.
Can we talk about the play where Connaughton, it was an inbound play, Connaughton hit the 3, the only one that was close enough was Gardner, and he was getting screened out, and I think Mayo was actually guarding Junior Cadogan on the play. I mean, those were the types of mental mistakes that took place in that game that yes, you point to those certainly had more of an impact than the officiating. Because on defense, we just look lost. And I actually put a fair amount of the blame on Buzz. And
I think that's definitely fair.
And you know, and I'm just some random guy on the internet. So I don't, you know, I'm not a Division I coach like Buzz. And I'll ride and die with Buzz. But I don't think it was his best game by far. Didn't adjust. They were eating us up on the pick and rolls. And when they weren't getting us on pick and rolls, Connaughton was just unloading from 3, so we were dying by both ends. I would have loved to have seen a lineup go to the big lineup with Ox and Otule in. Actually, I think our best lineup would have been, and we need to, you know, continue the free Steve Taylor campaign. Our best lineup would have been Cadogan, Vanderblue, Taylor, Otule, and then either Wilson or Gardner at any given time. It would have given us offense. We could have gone to a 2-3, you know, and Connaughton would have been dangerous, but it would have ended those pick and rolls. I just don't think that Buzz really adjusted in the game.
Yeah, it's easy for a couple of internet dorks to sit here and second guess Buzz, but I agree with a lot of what you said there, especially Otule and Gardner together late in the game. When Marquette was just getting killed on the boards and was desperate for a rebound, it would have been nice to have those two in the game. And Steve Taylor, who has proven himself to be a very good rebounder, maybe more so on the offensive end, but rebounding is rebounding. He boxes out, he gets good position, he goes after the ball, and he's very effective. I would have liked to see more than 7 minutes from Steve Taylor. The turnovers on Marquette's side were also frustrating, but another thing Marquette does on defensively is they always double when the ball gets into the paint. And I guess that's something Notre Dame saw on tape, and they always kind of threw the ball into the paint on Connaughton's side of the floor so when they could kick it back out and get it to Connaughton for wide open threes. I guess that's just an adjustment, something Bray did, and it worked out fine. And I know, you know, that's something that works for Marquette, is doubling when the ball gets into the paint. But I think when you part of the game is adjustments. And when you have a guy on the other team who is just on fire and is hitting everything and is just such a good shooter anyway, you have to just tell yourself, look, we have to do something a little different than we normally do. We just can't leave this guy open. We're not going to double, at least not off him when he goes into the paint. We'll just take our chances one-on-one and see if either Gardner or Otule can do well on their own defensively.
Well, is Cooley really that big of a threat? I mean, first of all, do they have like some sort of Shrek mold that they just stamp these centers out?
Yeah, it does seem like they have cloned our boy Goody.
Yeah,
there,
who's going to be a runaway in the digger bracket, I think, in that.
Yeah, that thing is brilliant, by the way.
What's that?
That thing is brilliant. I mean, my name is on it because I vaguely came up with the idea, but it was really Dan and Ruby that ran with it and put the whole thing together. So I'm definitely looking forward to voting through that thing.
But,
and we could break that whole thing down on another day. But,
right,
yeah,
but
I think Goody is surely a deserving top seed in that thing.
But I mean, I just don't think Cooley's any kind of threat that we need to be concerned about doubling him, especially when Otule's in. I have every faith in Otule on defense going man-on-man without issue in the post. Mm-hmm. And going back to the Steve Taylor thing, I don't know about you, but other than Vander's play this year, I have never been so excited about someone getting the ball at the free throw line like Steve Taylor, because he gets that ball and all of a sudden he's explosive. 2 steps into the rack, he could hit a jump shot. It's like you can just see his brain working and he knows exactly what he's doing. So I think we really need to free Steve Taylor. He may be the key to making some deep runs in the tournament coming up.
Yeah, he's still a freshman, and he does get abused on the defensive end, to be fair. I think that's why he doesn't play as much.
Oh, I agree.
They have concerns about him defensively, and that's why Juan Anderson, say, for example, is playing twice as many minutes as he is. But your point is well taken. If he's going to make the effort rebounding and maybe give you more points on the offensive end than he gives up on the defensive end, maybe it might be worth seeing Steve Taylor for 15 or 20 minutes.
Right, and again, that's you know, I agree that he's weak defensively, but that's where you go to a 2-3 zone, and he did really well against Syracuse in the 2-3 zone, and the zone kind of hides some of his deficiencies on the defensive end. So, again, I'm not saying we have to do it all the time or play him 36 minutes, but again, it's a game of adjustments. I'm hoping Buzz will take the next 7 to 8 days and make those adjustments. He's going to have plenty of practice time. They'll get rested. But it wasn't one of his sharper games. Maybe he was distracted by Jim Burr being upset that he showed emotion when Junior Cadugan took that charge. That was the weirdest thing. But, you know, like I said on Twitter, I couldn't imagine a worse life than seeing things through Jim Burr's eyes. But, yeah, it was just not a sharp game.
Yeah. You know, officials have just an attitude complex when they're throwing out fans. I don't know what those fans said to get them thrown out of the game, but it better have been something a lot further than "you suck." Because, you know, to stop the game and throw out a fan, I mean, they better be throwing things on the court and just F-bomb after F-bomb in a crowd of children to get them thrown out of a game.
Well, if you're Pat Driscoll and Jim Burr, first of all, you're terrible. Second of all, what haven't you heard someone say to you?
Right. I mean, I'm sure whatever those fans say, I'm sure Buzz and Bray and several other coaches around the Big East have said that 10 times over.
Well, I saw the guys on camera. I wasn't, like, thinking they were some sort of world geniuses that invented some sort of new insult. It was just bizarre, and it just added to the surrealness of the whole thing. And, you know, and there was just... It was just an off night. I don't know whether to say that this is the team that we're going to be for the tournament, or we're going to see the team that won 6 of their last 7. I'm confused.
And we have no idea really what to expect until we see the matchup and who Marquette's going to play. I would like to think... thing is, like I said at the start of the podcast, that wasn't Marquette's worst game because they shot the ball all right. I mean, the field goal percentage wasn't terrible. I mean, they hit a few threes. I don't think they took too many terrible shots. They just got beat on the boards and got beat on defense. And, yeah, they had a few very critical calls that went their way, that did not go their way, and that's just kind of the way it goes.
Well, and the play that if we can see more of this, Jamil Wilson's baseline drive where he scooped it and reverse laid up, that's an association move. That's insane.
That was nice. Not going to see many of those, really, from anybody. But it's moves like that why people say Jamil Wilson is the most talented player on the team.
Yes,
he doesn't always show up in the stat sheet that way, but you see his NBA potential. I'm not saying he'll be in the NBA, but you see that potential when he makes moves like that.
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely got the physical tools. So it's just a question of, can he put together 30 minutes a night? Because if so, this team is different. And he was there in the second half and really kept him in it, but It's going to be a question of... This team would be ridiculously good if Vander, Jamil, Junior, and Devontae can kind of all put a really good game together all at once. This team could beat anyone.
Yeah, that's asking a lot, but you're absolutely right.
I mean, it's just... It seems like it's always just one or two players, and the others are kind of having off nights. I would just like to see... two or three players have average nights and then a couple of good nights. It seems like when one's up, the other one's down. It's weird.
Just have a game when two of those guys, Jamil Wilson and Vander Blue, both have great games. Or Junior Cadugan and Devontae Gardner both have great games. Marquette could compete with absolutely anyone. And I'll say this, looking ahead to the tournament. The past couple years, it's kind of been a similar pattern, really, hasn't it? It's like first game, dominant, great effort, both against Xavier 2 years ago and BYU last year, came out on just blazing on defense and executed on offense, then a nail biter in the second round, and then, you know, get your doors blown off in the Sweet 16. I guess we'll see what happens, see what the matchups are, but I think I'm optimistic that, like you said, over this next week that Marquette has to kind of regroup, I guess maybe 5-6 days, depending on when they play, regroup, refocus, and just come out with a really solid effort in the first game against a team that's probably going to be either a mid-major or a lower level Power Conference team.
Well, where do you see our seeding sit now, Joe, with the kind of the results?
Well, like, the two that I look at the most, one, of course, is the one that everyone looks at, is Joe Lunardi, who some people make fun of when he misses a few here and there, but I think overall he does a pretty good job and does a good job projecting these. And the other one is a guy we went to college with, David Kamichik, who writes for the sportsbank.net, and he does a solid bracketology. This morning they both released fresh ones, and they both still have Marquette as a four seed, and they both have them in Salt Lake City. So I think that's kind of that kind of confirms what we thought last week, is that Marquette could have probably reached a three seed with one win, but we're comfortable and pretty safe at a four. But I think an early loss puts them in a position of being sent out west as a four or dropping down to a five, when, of course, that means you're not protected and really could go anywhere. So I think Marquette is kind of playing jump rope with that 4-5 line, depending on how some of these other conference tournaments shake out.
Yeah, I think that's right, because I think there's a chance, you know, I think we're solidly a four, but my fear is a five. I really do think we may drop to a five. It just seems the committee underseeds us by one every year. I don't.
Yeah, you see, like, because obviously one thing that hurt, Wisconsin beat Michigan, so Wisconsin may be on the way up. They both Lunardi has Wisconsin as a five, and Kamichik had Wisconsin as a five. So the Badgers could be moving up, especially considering Ryan's history against Crean, because if Wisconsin goes on and beats Indiana, then you definitely got to think the Badgers are going to move up.
Right. And, well,
and St. Louis is another team to watch in the A-10 that could move
and
up.
And Notre Dame beating us could move them ahead of us, actually.
Right. If Notre Dame gets a win over Louisville, that could be another team that could jump us in the seeding.
We may fall to a five, but the question is, if we fall to a five, yes, it's not protected, but, you know, would we rather be a four in Salt Lake, or maybe if you end up a five in Kansas City, or a five in Austin? I mean, would one of those be better?
Yeah, it's like it's all about, like you said so many times before, matchups and location. I would rather Marquette be closer to home, certainly, because, you know, road games, Marquette has not played well, but I guess it depends on that who that other team is going to be. Like, I would, you know, I'd be fine being a five in Salt Lake City if the 12 seed is, you know, Virginia, you know, because they're going to be traveling just as far. But I certainly wouldn't want to be a four seed, in Lexington playing Belmont, because, you know, Belmont's, of course, in Tennessee, and they'd probably have a lot of fans that would come up. So I don't know what's going to shake out. All we can really do is just cross our fingers and hope for a good matchup, a team that Marquette can hopefully pound the ball inside against, get easy baskets, because that's really what I'm going to look at. Two things I'm going to look at when I see who Marquette's opponent is. Number one, do they press a lot and get a lot of turnovers? And Belmont's one of those teams, by the way. And the other thing is, do they have big guys? Because if I look at a team and say, oh, they got a couple of seven-footers who just beast on the boards, then I'm going to be concerned. But if it's a smaller team, I'm going to say we could probably get inside to Devontae Gardner, and Otule could probably can control the paint on the other end, and Marquette could probably hang with whoever this team's going to be.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. I think we can deal with height. It's going to be the active guards and the pressure. If the other team can't press or isn't very athletic, I have zero concerns. If they're athletic, it's going to be a real struggle, especially early.
Right. Yeah, I'd be afraid of, say, being in a 4-5 scenario where VCU is the 5.
Oh.
That's a team I want nothing to do with.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree
The
more.
Havoc defense would do that exactly, that wreak havoc on Marquette. But we'll see the matchups. Like I said, we could just go ahead and pick out all the 12 and 13 scenes I'm looking at in the bracket here and break them all down, but I think that's a waste of time. What we're going to do, that's going to basically wrap it up for this kind of abbreviated podcast. We're going to get back with everybody on, I guess, Monday or Tuesday, because, you know, Phil and I, we have jobs. Life gets in the way of this podcast sometimes. But we'll kind of break down the brackets early next week and kind of see where Marquette is going to be. Any kind of final thoughts, wishes, hopes as the brackets come out, Phil?
I would tell everyone in the Marquette community, breathe. It'll be okay. Mm-hmm. It sucks to lose to the neon popsicles from Notre Dame, but we'll right the ship here, and let's just hope for a good draw in a good location. That's all we can really hope for, and then let the team take care of the rest. It's gonna be an interesting ride, that's for sure.
Right. We will anxiously await and talk about it Selection Sunday early next week, and then we will break down the brackets, and we will talk to you then. So hope your St. Patrick's Day and your Selection Sunday is seashells and balloons. We'll see you next time, everybody.